This is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And in the studio with me, Lisa Arnone, who my co-host and fellow researcher, and Gianna Valerio, also assists me in the production of these programs. It's been quite a remarkable time these last couple of weeks, and I want to focus on a certain aspect of the human mind, and this has to do with positive psychology and how relevant it is right now.
I know I was curious about where you got the idea for positive psychology.
It really wasn't an idea. It's really the concept of an optimist. Here I was going to school, and I went to school learning all about psychology. You know, it's pretty dismal. I mean, everybody's attitude towards mental illness and all the things that people do was pretty judgmental and pretty negative. And practically every therapist I ever met was negative. They're just downers. But I grew up in a place where I just marveled at people's survival skills. And I tell you, Lisa, just see people pull themselves through the most difficult of times, as we do see nowadays, is a remarkable thing. You can't really find fault with them, with their beauty, with their abilities. So my focus has always been on people's strengths and how they get through. Now, simultaneously, I mean, as I'm developing my own work, which I'm calling positive psychology, I started a thing called the Foundation for Positive Psychology, then all of a sudden, a school pops up called Positive Psychology, which has a kind of a different attitude towards it. Because it's not what people think it is. What people think it is it's making a positive out of everything. No, it's a belief that if you see and understand everything, you will be more positive. Positive is the closer you are to reality. The less you have to hide is that the more present you are, and therefore the better you are in this world. That's my belief. My belief is that most people spend most of their time worrying about false things, artificial things, or producing things that make them worry. I was talking to someone recently who's she's always got problems and problems and problems, and she keeps creating the problems deeper and deeper, and every time she gets out of one problem, she creates a supposed resolve for that problem that's bigger than the problem before it. Right? And it's continuous. And every time you speak with her, it's almost like you want to be able to give her advice and say, please stop doing this to yourself. But the advice doesn't matter, because the next thing that she's going to do is involve herself in another problem. That's going to be something that will be her next desperation. So I think my attitude has always been, okay, so that's one way you survive. And even though I watch you, and a part of me looks at you and aches to see you go through this much pain, I also realize that pain is the way you live. A lot of people define themselves by pain, by struggle. As one famous man once said, if I didn't have pain, I wouldn't know I was alive. So from this grows this attitude that I have towards people, which is, and everybody knows, which is, you're okay the way you are. Whoever you are, you're okay the way you are, and I will help you try to find a place in life that's a little better for you. But I certainly respect you for who you are. So that's the beginning of it. Now, simultaneously growing out of the 60s and 70s is another school of thought called positive psychology. And positive psychology, which is a little bit different, its attitude is focus on the positives, focus on the positives. Mine is, I don't care if you focus on the positive or negative, because neither one makes a difference. The positives sometimes are just as false as the negatives. Just see reality, see what's there. But it brings us to this question that you know a lot about, which has to do with the work of Mihai Csikszentmihalyi, you know? He was this man who did some amazing discoveries, and this is a work that is kind of amazing, called the autotelic personality. Something you know about, Lisa. So what is the autotelic personality?
Well, the autotelic personality is a person who's able to be completely involved in what they're doing without regard for what the outcome is or what the reward is. It's a pleasure in doing what is right in front of you.
So if you're killing somebody with a knife and you're stabbing them and just enjoying the stabbing, is that autotelia?
No, well, it's really something that's more... it's something that's really...
All
more,
right, let's let the audience in on this. This is what I do to Lisa all the time.
It's something that's more... It's more positive. Well, we think that it can go either way. But basically, it's a task. It's not something to destroy something. It's usually something to create something. And it has goals. But you get involved in such a way that it's like time passes outside and you don't even know it because you're so involved in what you're doing.
So it could be knitting.
It could be knitting. It's associated first with artists, people who get so deep into what they're doing that they, you know, they lose themselves for some period of time.
And even though it's called positive psychology or positive psychology comes out of it, it does not necessarily relate to sanity, does it? But because I think in the autotelic, it means you're better off. Whereas for a lot of people, artists especially, can get so totally involved in something. You can get involved in love and romance, like I said yesterday, which is, you know, all equally distracting and not necessarily bringing you there. So the autotelic personality does talk to a state of concentration or complete absorption with the activity at hand in the situation, but there is a number of other things that go with it, okay? And a number of other things. It's not being disconnected, it's more being connected.
Okay, so there are five C's of the autotelic personality.
One more time, by the way, just to get you to say the word. Whose work is this?
This is the work of Mihai Csikszentmihalyi.
His first name is Mihai.
Mihai Csikszentmihalyi.
Csikszentmihalyi.
It's Hungarian, but sounds...
Right.
Any culture, the way we say it. Okay, so the five C's of the autotelic personality would be clarity, which is knowing what you want to do as you go through the everyday activities of your life. Then there's centering, which is becoming one with what it is you are doing. Then there's choice, the understanding that you have the possibility and you are not forced to do the things that you do. You do them because you want to. There's commitment, which is the ability to care about the activities that you do. And finally, there's the challenge, which is a setting of higher and higher goals for yourself as you master your current level. So while you can get lost in it, it doesn't seem like it's exclusive. I mean, you stop to eat and stuff. It doesn't seem like you... Not exactly like a starving artist or...
There's a person who is waxing a floor and finding beauty in waxing a floor and sands a floor and waxes a floor and is working on the floor. And I keep thinking about this, the art of it, wax on, wax off, you know? Mm-hmm. And the beauty of it as you're doing it is that there's a kind of transcendent feeling, especially if you're smelling the fumes. No, but there's a transcendent feeling in doing anything. If you're totally involved in a way that has you kind of feeling okay.
I used to get this when I was doing the dishes. That was the chore I had to do as a kid after dinner. And the whole, like, going around with the sponge and the soap bubbles and the flowing water, I used to go into a little trance over there, which they used to tease me about, but it was like a meditation. It was like I was in the experience, and it made it less unpleasant, certainly, to have that as a chore.
Soap? Use soap on dishes? Okay, I'm only kidding. Soap?
Ivory soap.
Yes, when you can get into anything. But it's not just about rituals. It's about a connection. It's about a connection for the self. Now, let's keep in mind that there are a number of people who have this artistic connection and a number of other people who don't have the artistic connection. So you don't have to be artistic to have this, which Csikszentmihalyi talks about, but we're really talking about a sense of flow. Now, this is very important because the psychology of flow is a mental state of operation in which a person performing an activity is immersed in the feeling of energized focus, full involvement, enjoyment, but with alertness. See, with alertness, with awareness. It's a single-minded immersion that represents probably the ultimate in harnessing the emotions in the service of performance and learning. In flow, you know, the emotions aren't just contained and channeled, but they're positive, they're energized, and they're aligned with the task at hand. Now, we thought for a long while that searching for flow was the answer, right? And we thought this is all you have to do. You have to get yourself to a point where you are totally immersed. Recently, I presented a program on how people leave their minds. And one of the ways to leave your mind is to be in flow. You can leave your mind, and then suddenly you could be just involved in something either artistic, romantic. Rage is another one. There's a form of flow, you know, where you're just screaming and yelling. War, military, I mean, all of those could be seen as flowing.
When you say flow, I don't think of something that's just individual. I think of something that's more kind of global. Like when you're checked into, when you get into the flow, are you connected to other people in a flow?
Not necessarily, huh? I mean, not necessarily. That would make it for us the communal flow, the big flow. You know, we'd have to give it a new name. We'd have to get it into a different place. There's a sense of personal control, but now, and I want everybody who's listening to understand that there is this beauty and beautiful experience in this thing called flow that makes life seem like it's worth living. It seems like without it, what would you be faced with? And A Thousand Clowns, the movie A Thousand Clowns. You remember A Thousand Clowns?
I never saw it, I'm ashamed to say.
In A Thousand Clowns, I played the role of the uncle when I did a small acting part of my career. Nick was my nephew. In order for me to keep Nick as my adopted son, the social workers demanded that I, the uncle, get a job. And I never liked working, so as the uncle, I didn't, in this play, I didn't work. So I was supposed to go for a job interview so that if I got this interview, I could tell the social worker I had this interview and therefore they wouldn't take Nick away from me. But I didn't do it, and Nick comes over and confronts me, and here's this 12-year-old boy, says, "Why didn't you go for this?" And here was I remember the lines that I said during the play. It said, "Well, the problem with life is this, Nick. Here's the reason I couldn't go for the job. When I was headed downtown, I was passed by 42nd Street, and there were 14 50-cent double features." This is before porn hit 42nd Street. It was like there used to be movies. He said, I had my choice, either go for this interview or go to the movies. He said, "Now, here's the problem in life is this. When one is faced with life in its bare-ass raw on one hand and 11 50-cent double features on the other, what is the mature, mentally healthy step to take?" That was the question. And this becomes the question of flow as well. When, what's the thing to do? Is it that you should be enjoying yourself? Is life about enjoyment? Is life about pleasure? Is life about sensuality? Is life about love? Is it all about loving? And if you have loving, therefore nothing else matters? It's a question. And we hold up these ideals, but the problem with the ideals is the people who don't live that way feel bad. It's a little like being alone at Christmas. You know, when you're alone at Christmas, or if you're Jewish at Christmas, it feels kind of funny because everybody seems to be having a good time and you're not. Well, in our listening audience, there's a group of people who do not experience flow. And are we saying to them, oh, you know, you're not... You're just not getting the most out of life.
I would think everyone has the opportunity to feel flow, because the way I would apply it is I would want to find the flow in whatever it was that I was doing, like washing the dishes or cutting the vegetables or, you know, what you see on the way to the train station. There seems like, if you're inclined or willing, there's opportunity.
Okay, there's opportunity. So what we try to teach people is to be okay with being themselves, with being okay and immersing themselves in whatever they're feeling, including even the negativity. The trouble is the thinking. It's where you go with your mind. And when your mind directs you somewhere, it can very often be a trap that takes you out of your flowing self. Now, you could feel bad. I met a man today who said, I never cry, as he sat in my office for the first time and wept. As he was weeping, he says, I never cry. And then he said to me, he said, I've been listening to your program for many years. He said, and I could say I've cried maybe 10 times that I could remember. And 7 out of those 10 times were when listening to your program. Because at that moment, for some reason or other, this program, the audience, the Positive Mind, WBAI, whatever it is that we put together, allows people to have this feeling of being able to be in the moment, and in the moment with other people, including the flow of your own tears. Isn't it interesting that tears are described as flowing? Because very often, sadness, not sadness, but weeping, puts you in touch very much with your whole self.
Yeah, well, it seems like when it's like the physiological connected to the emotional, somehow that's an experience that goes deeper. And also, it doesn't always feel like you can control it, which is good.
You know, although Cheeksentmihalyi was the one who kind of brought this up. The concept of flow goes all the way back to the teachings of Buddhism, Taoism. They speak of a state of mind called the action of inaction, or doing without doing, that greatly resembles the idea of flow. And flow is not a very new and gentle idea, but it is something that we want people to be able to get access to. Now, let's talk about the conditions for flow. One cannot force oneself to enter this flowing experience. It just happens. A flow state can be entered without performing any activity, but I believe you very often have to let go of thought. You can't have just active thinking. I think thinking is itself a trap to the flow. So it's most likely to occur when one is wholeheartedly performing a task, but passive inactivities like taking a bath or watching TV usually don't elicit flow. Watching TV somehow takes your mind out of it. You don't usually get it. Flow theory postulates there are 3 conditions that have to be met. One is one must be involved in an activity with some clear set of goals. Some clear set of goals, something you're trying to do. And very often, you know, I believe walking does it. And strangely enough, I think so does running. That there's a goal in mind, there's this kind of, and you kind of hit this thing, this feeling, which makes it go beyond the chemical of the endorphins and everything else.
But it seems like driving, I would think driving, no. And I associate that with television. Like somehow if there's a device involved, then it takes you away from the ability to reach the flow. Like,
well, I'm not sure. Would you say that about bicycle riding?
Well, I don't know. In the car, I know sometimes I find myself someplace and I didn't even think about it, but
okay,
I wouldn't
but
call
that's
that
different.
Is
that's right,
flow.
Is that flow. When you find yourself in some other place in thought, because I think what you're saying is that flow itself is a kind of a, it's kind of a, an experience that doesn't have thinking to it. It's a feeling. Now, you could be creating something, and you could be actively creating something and be in total flow, and of course you are thinking, but it's not the result of thought. It's a feeling. I am sure that every mother holding a child gets that feeling at some point.
Absolutely.
Tell me about that.
Well, it's, I mean, I'm going to equate having a newborn to being in Italy. Like, you have to really adjust to not doing a lot. You have to adjust to sitting still and just being where you are in that moment. And that moment can last hours, like if a baby falls asleep on you. And then you're just there, and there's this warmth and this heartbeat and this sweet breath. And, you know, you're kind of like in a little cloud, a little atmosphere of your own.
You know, Chizik Mihai hypothesized that people with several very specific personality traits may better be able to achieve flow more than the average person. And the primary ingredient was curiosity. Curiosity, persistence, low self-centeredness. Because if you're self-centered, you can't see what's around you. And if you're not curious, now here's curiosity, I almost want to dedicate a program to it itself. If you hear two people who are lovers talking to each other, if they're married, are they curious when they talk to each other? If you are looking at somebody who's talking to you, like my experience with you, Lisa, you mm-hmm. know, my experience with you when I hear you talk, I'm always curious about what you think because I have such respect for your thinking. And so I look at you not to discard your thought, but I'm curious. Where's she going to go with this? Where's her thought going to go? And I know you have that with me too.
Absolutely.
That curiosity is such, to me, an important feeling about a relationship. You know, I have that with each. I have that with John as well. It's like, okay, now where's your mind going to go with this? Show me where you are. Please show me about you. Teach me. Not just about you, but teach me. Maybe I could share this with you. When I listen to lovers or I watch lovers talking to each other and they're talking at each other, no one's really curious about what the other person is feeling or thinking. They're just talking. Talking at. But not listening with a curiosity. Listening with a third ear, listening with an ear somewhere off. You know, all right, let me hear if there's something here I could use as evidence against you. Something I could use as a weapon. But not a loving curiosity. Tell me what you feel. When I have asked people about their experience over the last couple of weeks, I felt like I was like a sponge. Absorbing every second. How could I, where would I ever get an idea of what it was like for each person? When you listen to people talking about their experience over the last couple of weeks and the last difficulties, it's, aren't you, don't you feel like you're, tell me, give me more details, tell me what happened. But mostly when you listen to people talking, it's kind of you're trying to fill it in. Well, that fits in with what I'm thinking, that fits in with what I'm saying. Curiosity. some of us have learned to shut off our curiosity. That's been one of the ways that we've gotten through life. You shut it off, you're not curious anymore, you just either know, or you make believe you know. Or you make believe it doesn't matter. And you lose your curiosity. People without curiosity, I don't know. I don't know if they have much flow ability, or should we call it flowability? Is a good word for it. This is Armand DeMille with Lisa Arnone. We're talking about a concept of positive psychology called flow psychology and the autotelic personality. So very, very important is curiosity. And then being able to persist is also another thing. Now, here's the problem with you. If you're too nervous, it's very hard to stay on one subject for any length of time. It is very difficult to stay in one place because your mind is taking you. When you're nervous, your mind is always looking for danger. So an anxious person is always searching for where's the danger, where's the danger, where's the danger, where's the danger. If you could focus that anxiety into the task at hand and it reduces the anxiety so that your mind is not looking for the danger, then you can channel it into creativity or something like that or the task at hand. But if not, then the thought of danger wins over and takes you away from being able to enter any flow. Every time you go into something, there's a state of vulnerability with it, because entering a flow state of mind is a very vulnerable place.
Do you think that entering a flow state of mind would be calming?
Yeah, I think you have to be calmed to enter it. You know what I mean? In other words, yes, it would be calming. It has its own. But I think you also have to have calm available in order to go there. So in the autolytic personality, there hasn't been much research on it. There are ways that there are groups that have autolytic groups, you know, like people you work with who work together. And they work together and they have these characteristics that all seem to be moving. I've known this experience of working with people where we're all working in the same direction. It's a beautiful thing. I mean, part of the beauty of working in some of the newer institutions is everybody's got a similar goal. Now, I hear that there are some of the places we would imagine that would happen, like the biggest computer companies. It really isn't true. I hear there's a lot of tension in there. But in some kind of a cottage industry, you know, you very often see it. The old John Wiley used to have that as their publishing company until they modernized and moved.
It makes me think about my childhood experiences in church. In any place where there's a group of people together for a single purpose, just being immersed in a kind of, well, church has a lot of repetition too, but there's a kind of experience of being connected to everybody and all being focused on the same thing. I guess school also can give you that.
Well, I think you said something important about religiousness. You know, I mean, one of the things that people are trying to find inside them, it seems that it is such an essential feeling, this feeling of flow. It's almost like you're watching your blood flow. It's almost like you're letting yourself flow. That religion allows you some kind of a way of getting to this by focusing your mind on something and being together with other people, and then add to that some really good music, put some sweet scented air, give me some nice soft light and some candles, right? And let us all hum together.
This can be very powerful.
Very, very, very powerful. Powerful in many ways, in a positive way, and powerful in a negative way as well, because it's also hypnagogic. Now, hypnagogic simply means that you dissociate, you leave your mind, and you're now no longer there. In the autotelic personality, you're there. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with Lisa Arnone. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue. of mine, Lisa Arnone, John Valerio. Pretty when you listen, you could hear, you know. I remember in my earlier days when I was a jazz musician, I couldn't think of anything more rewarding than being able to be with a five-piece band, and we would hit that moment where we would play the perfect music. And it could be, well, since it was jazz, a lot of it was innovation. And just the feeling of being part of a family like that, creating and hearing yourself brought about to this musical place with such a, this fantastic place with such a uniting feeling. And it made me ask the question, what is it about this that brings us here? And so many of you have had that question. So many of you have had that question. What is this? This feeling, you know, the flow feeling that you get through sex, through love, through music, through creation, through creativity. What is it? Why is this so really good? What are we going to say about it? You know, can it be felt all on your own? Yes. Yes. I mean, I am sure if you're playing your guitar and it's perfect, it's perfect. I'm sure if you're drawing something or doing a painting and it's perfect, it's perfect. And there's a moment of perfection. So what is a moment of perfection about? This is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind. We're asking a question about flow. The work of Cheeksentmihalyi, who said, Mihai, who described people who have an internally driven, they have a sense of purpose, a curiosity that brings them to a certain sense of flow. And he says it goes beyond comfort, because if you just fit into comfort, you don't have that flow experience. That's a very important thing, because in comfort, you get lazy. You know, couch potato? No flow. Couch mashed potato, maybe. You know, that may have flow. Just mash it up a little bit. Couch potato sitting with a bunch of buddies watching a game. Flow. Suddenly laughter together, feeling together, you know, possibility there. Well, playing a sport could be flow. Now, there's a thing about gaming theory. And in gaming theory, they try to produce a thing for young people to get into a game, you know, a video game or a computer game that will keep you completely captured and will feel you going to that new level and the new level and the new level. And I don't know how many of you have ever been caught in one of those games, because I certainly have put myself in those. It is so exciting. It is so amazing. It feels like the entire world is all about this thing, and nothing else matters. So what's happening during that moment? Are you hitting a true flow experience? That's right. Some place that you should be going to, and if anybody from the outside would be looking at you and saying you're playing a silly game. How could that have any meaning to you? Well, I think there is meaning, and before the end of this program, I'm going to tell you what I perceive is the real trick here, the real thing that's going on. But this is described as the autolytic personality. Lisa, you were going to say?
I was going to say that a couch potato lacks alert. Alert is a really important part of, and a group of people watching a game, they're alert because
That's right, because they're doing it together. And right. Comfort is a danger.
Right,
comfort is a danger because you don't get into. Although you could get into a flow sleeping, you know, is it possible that sleeping is a flow experience? I've awakened sometimes and felt that my sleep was.
That would be lovely.
Because I believe there is a bottom to this. I believe there is an essence to this. And to this, autotelic, right? There could be a trap of falling into a trap of playing video games, and you fall into flow constantly, while some of them do so because they enjoy games and they realize hours of their lives have passed. The disengagement from life seems okay at first, But soon it becomes a pattern of behavior that has you constantly disengaging with life. Flow could also be something that moves you away, as well as towards. However, what is the addiction? What is the part that is so appealing? And now I want to tell you my perception of this, my friends. I believe, and I've said this before, that there is an existential consciousness. That there is, on some level, we have a consciousness that we are all connected. Now, I know these words are very simple, because everybody's kind of saying it, we are all connected, we are all connected. But I believe that once you get past the skin-encapsulated ego, you get a sense of being connected to everything around you. Almost as if, I remember describing this as my experience, is that I'm a sud in a world of soap suds. That the suds are kind of like, you get into a place where you feel like you're part of a sud. You're a sud in a world of soap suds, and the soap suds are growing, and they're getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And the flow experience to me feels like soap suds that you might do your dishes with. And the soap suds get to a certain point, and they get to this point where they burst all at once. And when they burst all at once, this is intense, incredible white light that is, it's that experience.
And then they flow together.
The question becomes the following. The question is, what is that about? What is that? What is it that people go for with drugs, with psychedelics? What are we reaching for? Are we reaching for some kind of unity, or are we reaching for some way of being away from everybody else? I think we're trying to get to that self. Now, I'm going to call that self, I'm going to give it a funny name, a name that you may object to, but I call it the God self. That whatever the God is, whatever God is, and I'm sure that there are many different definitions, it's feeling this union, feeling this connection with everything around you. I think that that's so important, so essential, that we do anything that feels like it. Sometimes we try to do it with a lover. Sometimes we try to do it alone. Sometimes we do it when we're doing engaged in something, but I think that the essence of the flow experience is its proximity to existential consciousness. Should I say that again? The essence of the flow experience is the proximity to existential consciousness, to where you feel this incredible thing. Now, I could tell you, sitting in this very studio where I have so many times during broadcast, having been with you people on the air, I've had that experience so many times. Here, it's amazing. It's amazing. Suddenly we're in, our assistants are here, the music is working, the radio is working, the broadcast is working, it's all happening at once, and we've got the callers on the air, and then magic happens, and pew, it's like the suds burst. And so many of you have heard and talked about how you could feel the potency across the air. It's not my potency. I'm a sud. I'm a small part of this thing that's going on. But when it happens, you will feel it. I feel it. We feel it. Not just with my program. I feel it also with other programs on the air and other broadcasters. I think they could bring it in. And I think when a broadcaster or somebody doing radio comes in and could bring you into an autotelic experience where you could feel that, into that flow of that, not just obsessed with what somebody's saying, but connected to. And they connect to you, and you connect to them. And through that, you connect to the universe. I think that's what the airwaves are for. I think that's what WBAI, and that's what our radio station offers. It's a funny thing here at WBAI, because at this very radio station, we have been offering a thing called the Buddy System. At first, which I listened to, and I said, oh my gosh, couldn't you give it a better name than Buddy? because that so speaks of such chauvinism. But now, if you think of the buds as soap suds, a bud is a small thing. Now I can imagine why, and I've watched the results of this. The result of it is that we have been and gotten from you, many of you, support in the form of a donation every, a commitment to a donation every month. Every month they take $10 out of your credit card or something, and that's it, and you support the station. And it's been big. The station is now getting a substantial amount of money from you people. You can all get that, by the way, if you want to revisit or if you haven't done it. You could be a part of it by going to the website, WBAI.org, and just clicking on the buddy thing and become a part of it, which I strongly, strongly encourage you all to do. So this brings me to what I believe is the essence of this thing that we're striving for. Is it mental health we want? I want to be free of mental anguish. I don't want to be thinking about grief all the time, and I don't want to think about solving grief. I don't want to be thinking about unhappiness all the time. I don't want that. I want to have a positive experience. A positive experience and the positive mind is a mind that is capable of connecting with itself, with the other people, and with the universe. Sorry if that sounds a little too spiritual.
I think it sounds wonderful. I think that there is something that holds us all together, and that we feed into and that feeds us. And I think the opportunity to connect to that can be a very moving and rejuvenating experience. So I'm all for flow.
There is a thing about in the flow experience, as you go to it further, there's a wonderful lecture by Chesed Csikszentmihalyi, who you can find on the TED.com. Actually, if you look up the flow experience, it'll guide you to a lecture that he gave, which really kind of brings you to it a little bit. Very well worthwhile. If you don't know TED.com, it certainly is a place where you can get a good education nowadays. He talks about what is closer to go flow and what is the antithesis of flow. The closer to flow is the worst. The opposite side of it is apathy. That's the trouble with depression. The trouble with depression is apathy. The trouble with depression is you get to a point where you just don't care. You go numb. Numb is worse than feeling bad. Feeling sad, the flow of tears, you're still in it. Somehow feeling numb, dropping out, that goes as far away from the flow. Now, if we talk about what he calls the autotelic personality, you go away from the autotelic personality because you are now out of that potential flow, and you basically drop out, and you're no longer a part of what's around you. And if we're taking it to what I talked about, the existential consciousness, you're no longer a part of it. You have the illusion that you're no longer a part of it. You just have the bubbles that don't pop. Now, of course, that's an illusion, because really you are still a part of everything around you. Still, you're part of me and everything that exists, but you have the illusion. And somehow a mask comes over your mind and you feel apathy. So apathy does not do it. Second to apathy, believe it or not, is worry. Worry, unfortunately, uses your mind. Worry is one of those things that is going to get your mind to just be active in the most unproductive way, because it has a pull towards apathy. See, it has this pull towards depression. You worry, you create a worry, you have a worry, you're in the worry, you're repeating something over and over and over again, and you're just repeating a pattern. I see. So worry is the second one of our ways to to move away from it. And of course, there's anxiety. Now, anxiety, we've got to figure anxiety to be the engine, the thing that is driving us. Now, of course, it is perfectly natural at this time in life for everybody to be feeling anxious. Why would you feel anxious? Because anxiety is the part of our body that says to us, there is a danger somewhere. How many of you people have feeling that there is a danger? Of course there was a danger. Of course there is a danger. Of course there may be a danger this week. Now, before, we used to listen to danger. Before 9/11, we listened to danger, 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 and we didn't pay much attention. Then 9/11 comes, and an entire government tells you there's so much danger that we have to go kill the Iraqis. Right? There's so much danger, and they sell you, there's proof of danger. There's proof of danger, and then that all passes away. That goes away for 10 years. Right? And then comes these experiences, and the three experiences, the tsunami, you know, New Orleans, and then this, they kind of bring you to a sense of, wait, there's a danger we didn't even figure on. Those of us who felt protected. Right? This is a danger that's even greater than the one we've known about. So these dangers alert your mind. Now, your mind goes on alert, and once it goes on alert searching for danger, it's hard to stop. It's very hard to stop. You can't stop being vigilant, but you want to stop worrying about where the danger is. You want to be concerned about a danger, but not overly concerned about a danger. It's impossible. It's almost impossible when you're under stress. So when people are under stress, I expect they're going to be very nervous. Nervousness is definitely going to remove you from the flow experience, because nervousness is going to lead to worry, and worry is going to lead you away from yourself. You're going to be looking around. You're going to be trusting nobody. You're not going to be able to love during a worry time. And that's okay, too. That's a transition. That's part of life. Most of my life growing up, I've seen people who are like that. They were nervous. They were scared. They were afraid. But they didn't have any room for really trusting and loving. And I'm not saying you should. I'm saying that that's okay, that makes sense. So the people who have the worry, the distrust, the anger, the angst, and the anxiety are going to be the people who are going to be least connected to their own flow experience. And the flow experience, the what I'm talking about, is the existential flow experience. It's not playing a video game. It's the one where you can feel your connection to everybody around you. Look at your brothers and sisters. Look at the people as you existed. And I've just watched, as I've watched mostly on television, watching people dealing with Sandy, and I hate to use that name, Sandy. What about all the people named Sandy? You know, what do I just take that out during the hurricane? All the people who were dealing with it, and the compassion among the people who are working with each other. They're trying to feed your partners and your neighbors. You know, getting to that point, they get the connection. But then they disconnect because of danger.
Well, it seems like times of crisis can elicit that kind of connection. It can, because it's necessary. So I don't know what to say about the nervousness. I think it's a problem thinking about what you're feeling, being worried about what you're feeling, all of that is hard. But there is an opportunity in a crisis for people to really join together and move toward areas of need.
Hey, Jana. Hi there, Jana. Just step back in the room.
Hi, Armand. You know, I was just thinking, like, some people during a time of crisis, they get extremely focused and can deal really well with crisis. Like, all of a sudden, there's always, like, one person who's very calm, doesn't get hysterical, and who could really deal with focus. I guess those are the people who are really in the flow. Like, it's just like a light switch. Like, there's a crisis, and then there's one person who could really just deal under pressure and focus and move through it without freaking out. I guess they're in the flow.
And who do you think that one person usually is? You know, who is usually the one who is given that role?
It's usually maybe like the female. You know, like somebody who has, you know, children or something, right? Because a lot of times, you know, I've seen it. Mothers get like, instead of freaking out, they'll get very focused and they'll be able to really deal under pressure because it's a threatening situation, I guess.
How very interesting. That the paternal reaction very often is to react, to defend, to attack, whereas the maternal may be to protect. Fascinating. Fascinating. Good thinking. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about some of the reactions that we all have during this period of time. By the way, we would love to hear from you. We will be back on normal broadcasting. We intend to be back to our regular studios by next week. Right now, we're not functioning from the normal studios. We're doing it by recordings and the good graces of some of the amazing people at WBAI who are just working their butts off, especially the one who I will not talk about because he deserves so much praise that even to say it. So I'm not going to say Michael G. Haskins. I'm not going to say it. Hey, let's talk about flow one more thing. The other thing, the essence of what brings you to it. Now, arousal, you know, being aroused, that's one of those moments. You get turned on. You don't know what to do with it. But turning on arousal is part of the switch that happens with this existential consciousness. Unfortunately, people feel aroused. They don't know what to do with it, so they aim it for discharge. And that's where you wind up with arguments, tension, worry, or even sex. Just you feel arousal. And the first thought is, how do I get rid of it? What am I going to do with this? I'm turned on. Well, what about leaving yourself turned on? What's that like? You have to practically train yourself to do that. That's an experience. And there are people who are masters who have studied this, who have studied what it was like to be turned on and to stay alive without looking for a necessary discharge. You've got to be involved in an activity with a clear set of goals. And feedback is also important. You've got to be able to have feedback one way or another. Feedback from yourself or from your production. I can think of a couple of people, like I think of Davina Simo when she creates her work. And I've seen some of her work. She works with cement and glass and the feedback that she gets in her focus as she is working on this stuff. And it's like intense properties of different elements, and it's not just paint. It's like it's a creation, and what you have to do is stay within that moment. You can't leave it for a second. You can't. I mean, if you could, it just breaks the spell. But when it's done, it becomes these remarkable things. By the way, one of her pieces is up for auction at the WBAI Art Auction, which is open. If you're not familiar with that, the proceeds from that go to WBAI as well. And as you could hear in between everything I'm saying, I'm also asking you people to support this incredible station we have here at WBAI. The work that we've done, everything we've done together, and where we intend to be going. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I will be back with you again shortly. You can always check the website, thepositivemind.com, to find out when we are next on. Or WBAI. We're on a normal schedule of Tuesdays and Wednesdays with some exceptions. My special thanks to Jana and Lisa for helping me put this together. And to all of you, my love. I leave you with some beauty.